When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
The Fantasy Six-Pack Hour. With your hosts, Joe Bond and AJ Appleton.
Welcome to the Fantasy Six Pack Hour. My name is Joe Bond, founder of FantasySixPack.net.
I was waiting for it.
Why don't we just set it up so it starts?
I did it on purpose this time so that he would switch you.
We already all know that just to see if DAP is the bottom here.
It's a running bit at this point.
Yes, it is. It totally is. If you're only listening, little videos for AJ and DAP always get swapped because AJ gets put in the bottom of the pyramid
and he gets so angry and he's like, I don't want to be here.
We get little private chat messages yelling at us.
I told you guys my contract's up.
Yeah,
we're already off the rails at this point. If you were here for the pre-show, this is gonna be a good one, I promise you.
I think Nick's doing a bit, to be honest with you, at this point.
Okay.
I mean, won't admit it, but I think he's just doing a bit the whole time. That's just me.
He's here to please, right? Is that how it goes, DAP?
Yeah, I think so.
That's what DAP wants.
Yeah, just in all the puns like he was throwing earlier.
Dappy gets.
He's like, is this the After Dark show? And like, Nick, whoa, no, sir. No, sir.
I feel like I got to defend himself.
Let's move on.
I'm going to say, I feel like I got to do the friendly producer thing and put him in here to defend himself.
So we do have our guest. It is Nick Pollock from Pitcher List. We will bring him on in just a second. But before we do that,
the Nick Pollock, please. The V, it's in its the Nick Pollock. Get it right.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is it like the Ohio State University?
I mean, you know how we just, so everybody knows here, the audience, right? In the show thing, we actually use the in all capitals, Nick. And so I personally, he's been a hero of mine for quite some time. So just letting you know, this is amazing to me. This is probably one of the greatest experiences of my life. So
we are 2.5 minutes into the show and gotten absolutely nothing done. This is fantastic. I love it. But we probably have like record number of viewers, so maybe let's just keep going. No, seriously. We're here talking pitchers today, our pitching draft strategy and preview. Before we move on, though, just hit that subscribe button, hit the like button, leave those comments. We appreciate it. We love hearing from you. And, of course, jump over to fantasysixpack.net. Become an all-access member. You're going to get access to our award-winning rankings, our draft cheat sheets, which I just revamped thanks to Keith Lott and Dave Eddy's suggestions. Those went live this afternoon. And then, of course, our Discord, where you get access to all of us here on screen, included, and all the rest of the analysts over there at Fantasy Six Pack as well. Let's bring in our guest, Nick.
Yeah, I want him on a flight. His name is DAP Scout. He's gonna come. He's gonna come here. Get a flight over. Oh, hold, I gotta go. Bye. Hey guys, what's going on?
How are you? Hey, what's up?
How are we doing?
Nick's intern. I gotta write it something else.
What's happening? Thanks so much for having me here.
Oh man, this is tremendous. Wow. I can't even tell you how excited I am right now.
If you hear random like dead thuds throughout the show, it's Dap. And it's his desk.
Dap. Nope.
It could be
moving
any
on
Nick.
From that comment.
Yeah. Anyway, hi.
Hi.
It's great to see you guys. We do have a thing that's after dark. It's called Plaid. Picture list after it's dark. Okay. And that's because we don't curse at Picture List, but those that would constantly do in the voice chat, we said after 9 p.m., there's a voice chat in our Discord that you can go into, and you're allowed to curse in that one. I don't go in there. Of course, that's not for me.
Right.
But that's for the staff and the community. No. They need it. You know.
Yeah.
Dap runs that channel for you?
No, I don't know. Have you joined our Discord, Dap?
I have joined your Discord many a times, and the fact that you don't know that hurts my feelings even worse.
Well, fact
I
that you am, don't know Plaid.
We've talked about my pancakes username on Discord, but it's okay. I don't take it personal.
Yeah. Medium rare pancakes, by the way, all the way, completely. Yeah.
Medium rare pancakes?
Yes.
What? Is that a thing?
It's slightly undercooked pancakes.
Just batter?
Yeah. No, that's why it's medium rare.
Yeah, with the times, old man.
It's batter.
You know? It's not like, okay, look, it's not like a nice after sear. The cow, you don't eat it right away. Even that's not what rare is either, right? It's like it's still cooked.
Is this like putting cookie dough in the oven?
Okay, hold on a second, Nick. Right, so walk me through the process.
Like
you got a hot pan.
Pancake. Yeah.
How long you putting it on? How long you putting it on the each side?
You get a good feel for it. You see the bubbles?
Uh-huh.
See the bubbles happen, then you flip it over. You make sure it's a hot pan. Uh-huh. Do it again. You give it like a good pacing to it. And then we feel like there's at least like a consistency where it's going to hold. You pull it off.
But it still feels a little like a stress ball type of situation. Like it feels like there's still a little
bit. Is that what you do
with
your pancakes? You
No, I'm just wondering because I mean, I don't know what medium. I'm trying to figure out what the consistency is.
It's like a chewy cookie kind of thing. Like it's instead of like a fully baked cookie, it's like a chewier cookie.
Have you ever had
like
soft
that
batch
as an
cookies?
It's so good.
It's like the soft batch versus the regular Chips Ahoy.
Got it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just making notes, Nick, just so you know, because as you know, I like to always have the breakfast of champions, and since you're the biggest champion I know, I want to eat what you're eating.
Oh well, thank you so much, and I do want to make another clarification. My sister went to Michigan. So please never compare me to the Ohio State University ever again.
Oh, I never did. I just trying to. Yeah,
but it was the analogous. I understand. That's not you, Dad. It's more on Joe. Don't ever bring them up when I'm on.
Yeah.
The
show. Oh, hey, that's fine with me.
I hate Ohio State.
I'm not a huge fan of Ohio State because I ran into a few fans in a hotel lobby one time, and I was like, "Oh, you guys go to Ohio State? Cool, in Virginia Tech." And they were like, "Ohio State? No, we go to the Ohio State." And I was like,
"Oh no!"
I was like, "That's what I said."
How many Ohio States are there?
Exactly my point. I told them that, and they got super offended. And I was like, "Well, now I don't like you."
I mean, there's multiple Knicks, but there's only one.
It's true, and you didn't specify which intern.
We've already dedicated way too much time to Ohio State.
Hi guys, thanks so much for bringing me on.
Yeah, by the way, Ypsilanti, Michigan, phenomenal place. I love one of my favorite places to go. All right, go ahead.
I don't know where we are anymore. AJ, you just want to get started with the first question? I think we're just ready to start.
Yeah.
You ready to go?
That was great.
I'm totally out of line here.
All right. So tonight is our obviously pitcher show. So we are kicking it off here. Basically, everyone that we know drafting right now is picking between Stash Strider and Gerrit Cole as the top two starting pitching picks. In most of my drafts, Strider pretty much seems like he's going about 8-9 picks before Cole. How big of a difference in value do you see between these two, Nick?
I'm not getting either one. I think that the value of hitters really the first three rounds or so, 3 to 4, is so much the gap between those guys and the guys later on the draft, or really like, or you could say like 5 through 10, that gap much larger for hitters than his pitchers. So it means for me, I want to get the hitter value instead and be able to get my pitchers 5th, 6th, 7th or so. But between Strider and Cole, Strider is clearly the SP1 at this point. I was more on the side of Cole initially. And I actually have a lot of concerns, like little minor ones about Cole, but it wasn't as sturdy of a deck to stand on with Cole on my team. So the fastball got a little bit worse as he introduced the cutter, even though the cutter helped and made the shape worse for his four-seamer, which isn't a great thing to hear about really one of the most stalwart fastballs in the game. You have a slider that wasn't located as well and had a massive drop in how many whiffs it earned, which, again, not a good thing. So I'm not as confident in Cole, while it seems like Strider's getting better and in a really great team situation as well. And yeah, I'd just rather I would have Strider. So if I am saying like, oh man, do I want to get Strider now or like settle for Cole 8 picks later, then I guess I would go Strider. But I'm not really getting either one.
All right. Fair enough. Dap, we'll move to you. What are your thoughts on these two?
Well, I mean, I've never been one of those pocket aces guys. I like to wait on pitchers. I think it's kind of interesting that Nick will wait because, of course, he knows every pitcher, you know, like you just throw out a name and he'll pick out the ERA. So, of course, he can wait, right? Because he's going to know about the guy who used to be a janitor and is now the, you know, sixth pitcher on, in the rotation. But for the rest of us, our normal people, I don't know, man. I would definitely pick Strider over Cole, but I mean, Atlanta is such a powerhouse this year. You are hoping everybody in New York stays healthy for the other aspects of the thing. And also, you know, that home run ball he keeps giving up, you know, he seems to have these streaks with Cole that you're just like, he's giving up meatballs. Then, he, of course, being the veteran that he is, he fixes it. So I'm definitely going to go with Strider, but I'm like Nick, man. With this particular case, I will never get either one unless I'm in an auction draft because I'm holding off on getting pitchers for at least round three.
All right, Joseph.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's Strider. I had Strider in a few leagues last year, and the second half, you know, mild struggles he had a few blow up appearances, and it was kind of like, what the hell is going on over here? Like, at least he was striking out 10 guys, like that's kind of the saving grace with him. But I think he'll get that figured out. He's too good not to get that figured out. I mean, still, even with all that, a 3.8 ERA, not too bad. You know, Cole kind of righted the ship with his ERA, you know, brought it back down to 2.6. But again, like you were saying, Nick, was losing a tick on that fastball. I mean, still a 222 strikeouts, nothing to sneeze at. Like, that's really damn good. But you know, the strikeouts that Strider is going to get you is just out of this world, so much better. So that makes the separation just enough for me.
Yeah, definitely. Those are your projections in the second tier there. Is that right?
Yeah. So this is a little wonky of a slide, but yeah. So the top.
No, I love it. No, I didn't. I couldn't recognize it at first. I was like, oh, wait, that's got to be the orange you guys use on your site and everything. So that's cool.
Yeah. So good call out there. Should have explained that.
Yeah. I will make it a clean sweep here. I would, if I have to choose between these two, I'm going with Strider, but I agree. I don't think I'm getting either one of them in probably any leagues this year, so that's fine with me. All right, so let's jump into some Orioles talk. I feel like we have to have this on every show since Joe and I are both fans. So let's go with Corbin Burnes, the new guy on the block here. Do we think that he's going to bounce back and succeed in the AL East here? Joseph, we're going to start with you. Want to hear your thoughts on Burnes first, and then we're going to talk Grayson Rodriguez, whether or not he's ready for this full breakout. And who do we trust as the closer, Kimbrel or Cano? Joe, we'll start with you.
Yeah, so a little bit about Burnes here. I wrote about him in the early top 10 pitchers, and I had Burnes third, still do. I know a lot of people got a bad taste in their mouth from Burnes last season. He started off pretty slow. There was a lot of like chatter on Twitter all over the place. Oh, is he hurt? Is he gonna get shut down? We don't know. Yeah, maybe he was pitching through something. I don't actually know. But whatever it was, he figured it out in the second half. I mean, he brought his ERA down a full point, a full run, and then some. Strikeouts were back up. Batting average against was down. Everything was looking like the Corbin Burnes we all remember seeing and, you know, drafted that high for a reason. So I'm a firm believer that he's going to come over and be perfectly fine. I know the AL East is tough. But I mean, hey, at least it's actually a slight improvement at ballpark now, which is weird to say. You know, for years, Camden Yards was a horrible place for a pitcher, but not so much anymore.
So it's safe to say that you are not getting heartburns with Corbin here. Is that where we're going?
Ba-dum-ts. I appreciate it. Thank you.
I'm here for it. Silence across
all
the room.
All right. All right.
That one did not land.
That would have been the
because
perfect
you
time
said
for a cricket.
Whatever the mouth, and I'm like, mouth burns something.
No.
Nope. And I was like, all right, I got it. And then you wouldn't shut up. So I didn't want to interrupt your nice little monologue there. So, Nick, what do you think about Corbin?
Well, I mean, it's not a down year, right? 3.39 ERA with a solid whip and like 200 strikeouts. I understand that it's not 240, but I actually thought it was a down year myself at first. I'm like, wait, hold on. This was actually really good. I think it was a 105 whip, if I remember correctly, or something close to that.
Yeah, 107.
What? Like, this is great. What's also kind of cool is that he can improve in pretty much every way. His against right-handers, obviously the cutter was everything, but all the other pitches did not earn enough strikes. Generally, the threshold I have is 60% strikes as a reliable offering. And really, you aim for like at least one of your secondaries to be like a 65% strike rate. None of his match 60% or higher. So he could do better with his sinker inside. He can do better with his curveball, a slider. Any of those can be much better against right-handers. And that's a pretty simple change, actually, for something that has earned strikes in the past. It also meant that his cutter had to do more then, which then he allowed more mistakes on it. Against lefties, he's pretty much golden. It's a cutter. So cutters are the magic silver bullet against opposite-handed batters. You throw the inside if you need to. You throw it down and away as a backdoor. Like, it's always just good. And Corbin Burns is going to be totally fine against lefties. So just throw more strikes against righties, and he should be fine. And then you throw in the context of pitching in Baltimore, as you guys were mentioning. Like, that's a great situation. That's so good. So yeah. Huge fan of this. I originally had Burns at, like, want to say 6 in October, then I moved him up to 4, and then I moved him up to 3 after the trade. So I'm in here. I think he's going to be great.
All right. Anything to add, Depp?
Yeah, I think the main key, if you're watching anything in spring training, right, you don't really look at ERA because they're always trying to work on a pitch or things like that. But if Corbin Burns is locating his sinker, especially during spring training, you know, that's going to be kind of the big thing for me. I mean, again, going back to what Nick said, right? Is it really a down year? I mean, yes, if you had really lofty hopes for Corbin Burns last year, but I think it's only going to help him. He's going to Orioles. You know, they have a lot of aspects, and he's going to have, you know, I think a better defense definitely behind him as well. You know, there's some other areas of that trade that really, you know, stick out as well. Ortiz going just fantastic. But going back to the sinker, I think the sinker is going to be kind of the thing. It looked like it was a little bit all over the place last year, especially with his location for it. So if he can find a way to really locate that sinker in spring training and hopefully with the drive line, if he did that, then I definitely expect just nothing but good things for him this year.
All right, moving on into Grayson Rodriguez here. We also got his stats here. Joe, what do you think about Grayson?
Yeah, I'm optimistic with him, but you know, also a little hesitant. I mean, still a young kid. He struggled first time up there, and then, you know, once he got called back up, it was a totally different pitcher. I mean,
right?
You know, he was like 11 Ks per nine in the first half, and then came back and was like, he was below 9 per nine. So, you know, you want to see more strikeouts, but I mean, the fact that his ERA dropped 5 runs, you'll take that any day. and losing a couple strikeouts because he was getting obliterated at first. Like, he looked like he didn't belong. So whatever he did when he went back down, you know, working with that tremendous staff that they have there in Baltimore and that organization right now, really paid dividends. And yeah, I mean, I'm drafting him probably around SP. Oh, what do I have him at? Like, I think it's probably around like SP like 25-ish, maybe maybe 30 at the latest. So I'm pretty optimistic with him.
All right, Nick.
Man, 25-30. I think that's, you're not getting Grayson, I think, if you have him around there. Maybe I'm wrong about it.
Trying to figure out where I do have him. Yeah,
I haven't really looked at ADP lately, especially for like.
Yeah, yeah, that might be too low. I'm trying to think of where I got him now.
I understand if why you'd feel that way, because his four seamer was hit really hard. We have a stat called ICR, which is ideal contact rate. Essentially, it's really simple. It's saying, hey, all the batted ball types that hitters have that are good for them, like barrel rate and solid hit rate and flares and burners, which are great for them. Let's just bucket them all together and let's see how often I throw this pitch and it results in that, right? So the contact allowed by Grayson Rodriguez had like a 45 to 50% ICR on the fastball, which is so high. Like if I see 40%, I'm like, eh, that's like average and I want it to be better than average. And 45 is like, dude, no, 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 that can't be the main thing you throw. And that's kind of how it was for Grayson, even when he returned from the minors. The good news is that he is incorporating a sinker this year, and that should help mitigate that one. He does need to improve his command. I watched the other start he had in the spring, and at least the last one, not good. Not spotting well, not locating properly, missing east-west a ton. And I'm very much of a person that, when it comes to pitching analysis, I'm just all about like, all right, is this a fastball I trust? And then does he have secondaries he can get strikes with? And then can he get whiffs with those? And just kind of bucketing that all together. And Grayson has it. Like the changeup and slider can look absurdly good. I think what I've done is said normally sophomore pitchers who are four-seamer focused get better in their second season. That's just generally what we've seen. Best example I can give you is George Kirby. Though if they don't have good command, it's like Logan Gilbert. So I'm on the fence. And at first in February, I was really aggressive about it. I said, you know what? I'm going to do this because I just feel the fastball is like 98. And like he has such good extension. And he has a flat arm angle, which makes it so that the four seamers he throws upstairs are more difficult to hit. And then he has this changeup that should be filthy. And the slider is filthy. And the team context is so good. And whatever, let's have fun. Let's go get Grayson. And now I'm like, but is this command good enough? I don't know. So I'm on the fence about it. I think I had him around like 15 or 16 in my February ranks. I'm putting out another edition of it, or an update, I should say, on Monday. He might still be there. I don't know. I'm back and forth.
I've actually got him at 21.
Anywhere between I can see him anywhere between like 18 and 20 in my rankings, or not 18 and 20. I'm sorry, like 15 and like 22 or something in my ranks. So, I don't know how I feel yet. And I find myself being able to get him in the seventh. And considering that, like, I go for like Cole Reagans in the fifth or like Bobby Miller in the sixth or something like that. If Grayson Rodriguez is there as my third, it's like, all right, that sounds pretty good. I would go with that.
All right. Great analysis. That.
Yeah, I think it's a great analysis. Thank you for taking the words out of my mouth. Everything that Nick says is great
anytime.
Analysis. But yeah, no, I think
that's
the,
why I'm the host.
You know, there's not much I can add, of course. Anytime I have to go after Nick, there's not much I can say there. But at the same time, you know, I think when I look at second-year pitchers, I really like to find ones that had some type of have to work with some type of issues during that first year. If everything's kind of roses, then I'm really worried about year two. But the fact that Grayson had so many problems, kind of had to work through them and make those adjustments. And you saw that he made adjustments that obviously worked for him because of the improvements in the stats. That to me definitely bodes well, not only for his prospect pedigree, but that second year as well. So if when he does get hit hard, you know, what is he doing? But yes, the control is going to be the big thing as well with him. As with every pitcher, but mostly with the younger ones as well, when they're throwing that. But I love seeing the fact that he's throwing that new pitch. I'm pretty. Of course, I love the home ballpark as well. Definitely friendly to the long ball. So I don't know. I'm pretty much. I don't want to be like this because of the fact that I have a boss that's going to be like, oh God, you know, he picked an Oriole too. But yes, I really like Grayson Rodriguez right now. So I don't want to say too much because I'm sure Nick's going to write a 4,000 word opus next week and tell me why I'm an idiot. But for right now, I'm liking some grace.
It would be 5,000
words. What does that 5,000
words.
Grayson?
I apologize.
No, I think you made a really good point there. I loved it. I am a big fan of seeing young arms after they go through adversity.
Right.
When they first show up, they usually are a little bit better. They have adrenaline going. Then it's going to be tough. And normally after they recover for a much longer period of time. So I love that you brought that up. That's a great point.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of adversity,
I just want to put in the minute marker when I got a compliment. Hold on one second.
24-29.
Okay.
Speaking of adversity, he faced some pretty heavy adversity in the playoffs last year against the obvious ultimate World Series champions in Texas when he got completely shelled at his home ballpark. So good way to end the season if you're looking for having a lot of adversity and using that as fuel to fire for this year. So last topic we have here with the O's, like I mentioned, is the closer situation with Kimbrel, Cano. Dap, why don't you keep going? I just want to hear your voice a little bit more.
So as anybody's ever listened to me, if you're in a saves only league, get out now. It should be saves hold. I'm sorry. I'm going to scream that to the top. I just, my disclaimer right there, saves and holds. That's ridiculous to be closers. I know that Nick has an amazing closer article that is 10,000 words.
That's Rick Graham. He does all of that the saves and holds. They're so good. I don't do any of that.
But you make him good by being next to him. The SP1 next to the SP2. Stop. Okay.
Rick Graham, I'm so lucky to work with him.
Oh, I'm lucky to read him. Kimbrel Cano. I have Cano in probably about 75% of my dynasty leagues. So when I saw Kimbrel come in, I was super upset at first. And then I was like, is it though? Because I have a feeling that if Kimbrel takes off, I have almost zero doubt that the Orioles don't try to trade him for another piece, whether that be for starting pitcher or whatever, because they have so many bullpen arms that I think they can go with a cheaper version with Cano, who just shows kind of that light out tendency. And if anything, he learns from Kimbrel, right? But I think Kimbrel's gone midseason. If anything, if they need an extra asset, I just see closers being so cheap in the sense of, you know, going to somebody else that they don't move up with Cano. So yeah, I would put Kimbrel as, you know, one-ish, but if he stumbles or anything, I think they kind of move him around if need be, because they have such a deep bullpen and Cano is just so talented. I'm a much more Cano believer. I think Kimbrel's a little bit been in the oven a little too long.
Yeah. Not like the pancakes we were talking about earlier. Joseph, no. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm kind of a dab. I was actually kind of surprised they brought in a guy like Kimbrel. I thought they would bring in some bullpen help, but I didn't know they would bring in a closer. But Cano proved himself like once the injury happened there. But yeah, it is what it is. I mean, right now I do think this is going to be Kimbrel's job out of the gate, but we'll see. I mean, like I think this team is trying to compete this year. So any struggles, I think they would quickly go to Cano at least temporarily until Kimbrel figured things out. I'm not so sure about the trade thing. Kimbrel, I believe, is on like a 1 year, like basically a rental contract. So like,
perfect to trade him.
I mean, I would say
Just trade him anyways.
I mean, I guess.
I'm right, Joe.
Okay. Whatever you
You're
say,
wrong, Dap. I think that's imagine it's a scenario where Kimbrel is doing well enough that Kimbrel is, you know, something that someone other another team would want or something like that. Then why would you ruin what's working? It's a lot to ask saying, oh no, our bullpen is really great. We're just going to take this risk when it's proven often that if there is a bullpen that is cooking, those guys can make playoff runs. And if Kimbrel is looking good, then they're going to treat that like a huge asset for the playoffs. It would be playing with fire a bit if he's in a situation where he is looking great and then they deal him for something else. I also would think that the rotation wouldn't be a piece that they would trade for, because they will, I mean, crossing my fingers, have Bradish back and Means back and Grayson's there, and they have Cole Irvin throwing harder, and they have a lot of interesting arms that are in their farm system. They even have like Cade Povich and Chase McDermott and Justin Brewster. But then there's this guy, Albert Suarez, that they found on the backfields throwing three innings at 96, 97, earning all the whiffs and seven strikeouts. Like, what is this? Like, I don't get it. And it's amazing and awesome. And it just, I also wouldn't be surprised if Kimbrel's not allowed to be traded, or if he has like his 10-5 rule, or even something like that.
Fine. I'm not going to be a GM, Nick. I'm sorry. I won't be a GM. All right? You ruined my dream. All right? Fine. I get it.
Your dream is you woke up and like, what do I want to dream in life? It's that Kimbrel gets traded halfway through.
No, I thought for once I was going to be like, man, I'm going to bring in this idea that Kimbrel's going to be traded to fill up. Because nobody's going to get injured in the Orioles starting rotation at all, ever. So I was like, I'm going to wow Nick with my insight. And he said no. So thank
I'm
you,
so
Nick.
Sorry. I no, it's okay.
We got two comments I want to throw on the screen here from Chad Simpson.
Hey, Chad.
I agree on some of the Kimbrel logic, but we also have Dylan Tate lurking, who might be a better fit as a closer over Cano. Thoughts on that one, Nick, as you got covered up by the comment?
Nah, how dare you? No, it's good to speak, Chad.
Here, we'll fix it.
The way I see it is like, look,
I was just going to say, just
not necessary whatsoever. No, it's look, let's look at it this way. Kimbrel's the closer. I'm all in for this. I think Kimbrel's pretty good. Sure, if he's going to have his stumbles and everything like that, but Kimbrel still has good enough stuff and everything. Like, he's fine, and he's a good addition for them. Cano can then be used in high leverage situations. If Tate is looking great, awesome. Then he'll be used in like high leverage situations. Mm-hmm. If Kimbrel's a closer, it's a great position to be in. And time again, you see managers say, hey, we like having distinct roles. I do this in coaching all the time. When my players know what they're supposed to do, they can focus on it more. They feel more comfortable in it. They don't like surprises. You see that with players all the time. They just want to know that they are starting that day, or that they are going to be playing on these days, getting rest on that day, et cetera. It's the same thing with closers. I would be surprised if we saw a lot of disruption there.
Don't mess with those working.
I was when Dylan Tate got drafted by Texas, I was, you know, they, I right? just thought they had picked
the
perfect
Yankees
thing.
Got him for Beltran.
I know.
That was insane.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I've been a huge Tate fan for a while. And I just hope he could stay healthy. I wanted to see him in the World Baseball Classic, but he was injured, and just love to see some Dylan Tate out there in whatever capacity, because I think he's just way too talented. I'm glad he returned to the Orioles.
Then we have a question here. I think he's moving around here.
Cole Reagans.
Cole Reagans all day.
Should I draft Bobby Miller or Cole Reagans? All right. You got
Cole Reagans.
Yeah. If it would have said, should I draft Mother Teresa or Cole Reagans? It's Cole Reagans. It's just,
oh,
it's,
yeah.
Mother Cole Reagans is all.
That's not going to work.
Have you not seen Mother Teresa throw a baseball? Oh my
clearly
god,
clearly not. Bobby Miller, I also really do enjoy. Actually, I've had multiple drafts where I got both Miller and Reagans from one after another, especially in the back half of the 12 teamer in the fifth, sixth.
Wow,
and I'm a huge fan of that. But yeah, Cole Reagans to me, I think a scout said left handed DeGrom, and it's he's amazing.
Wow. So he's going to get injured. That's,
yeah. So his career's already over.
Apparently, that he gets injured. That's later on. Draft him. That's like in 2 years.
Got it. All right. But Bobby Miller.
27. Reagan's not. Yeah,
Bobby Miller's not great, but Cole Reagans is everybody loves some Cole.
All right. Yes. So, yes, I will throw a little bit of a fire in for the Kimbrel. I obviously got to see him quite a bit last year. Wasn't overly excited when the Phillies signed him, but he showed he still had some in the tank early on, but then he kind of faded, and you know, he gets a lot of the blame for the collapse in the NLCS. I think it was more the manager's decision to actually put him out there knowing that he was cooked. But, you know, I'm hopeful for him this year. I've always kind of been a Kimbrel fan, you know, once he left Atlanta. But he's been dominant in his career. I think he can find something again. I do like Cano's upside as well. So it'll be interesting to see, see how they use him. They've already defined it as Kimbrel being the closer. So I think that's a step in the right direction for him mentally to yes. be in that role. So, all right. So speaking of my boy, Aaron Nola here, should we be considering Mr. Nola as an ace slash SP one? Is this another, like, hey, we're going to put this question in here and see if Dickhead's going to read it. Is that what you guys were doing?
No.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You wanted the Nola question. I'm we left it in. I just
wanted your games. Dap, start us off, please.
So
not get much love from him either.
In MLB The Show 2024, which is the preeminent ranker video game, they just released Aaron Nola with an 87 ranking. I mean, that's behind Zach Wheeler and Trey Turner and JT Realmuto. So you know, you got to kind of wonder if they know something about whether or not Aaron Nola. No, I'm kidding. So look, he looks amazing.
Second best pitcher.
He's good at ranking.
So look, he looks amazing during spring training. I don't know if I'm willing to. I mean, look, the upside's great. The team looks fantastic, but I don't know if I'm willing to put the price that's needed there. The strikeout's been dropping every year. The K's per nine. And he just seems to be giving up the long ball. But again, non-scientifically, even years seem to be good for Aaron Nola. So yeah, 2024. I honestly, Aaron Nola to me, every time I've had him on my team, he's destroyed it. Sorry, AJ. I'm trying not to bring in my own personal feelings about the situation, but it's just, every time I've had Nola, he's destroyed my team, and I never guessed right with him. And when he's off, like, he's
your problem,
off.
Not his.
And if you're getting an SP1, though, I want to have a set forget type of situation with an SP1, right? I want to have a person where I'm just putting him into my lineup. I don't have to worry about matchups until maybe later in the season when you find out like one team's just on fire and you want to, you know, hide him from, like, you know, playing in Cincinnati or whatever the case may be. But beyond that, I just don't know if, to me, an SP1 is a set forget. I don't think Nola's that, at least not right now.
All right, Nick, what you got?
Yeah, no, I'm the same way where Aaron Nola was, I think, initially at 11 for me. And I kind of, the reason I put him that high is because he has gone 200 innings with 200 Ks consistently. Like, that's just what he does. He's one of the most reliable starters as far as health and workhorse ability in the majors. And that innately says, look, 200 strikeouts with a whip that does not hurt me. And likely more than 11 or 12 wins. That's awesome. Is he going to allow home runs? It's really the big deal. 26 in 2021, 32 in 2023. And the good year blimp was 2022 with 19. Yeah. So I look at his arsenal and I say, all right, he actually has a really flat arm angle and he should be throwing four seamers upstairs. And guess what? He throws them away and it drives me up the wall. And a lot of batters were started to lean out and do damage on them. He started then to shift and throw sinkers inside a righties finally. And he actually had success with that. And I think there is a world where he does lean into that more often. Unfortunately, I don't really think he's ever going to be that high four-seamer guy. But he should be better than last year. And I have him at, like, I don't know, 16? Something like that. Is in the SP1? It's like a 1.5. Like, I don't really want to leave the draft with him as my SP1.
Right.
I just got him in labor with Bobby Miller, both at $18, because that's just better than the other guys at 23. Do I love it? Not necessarily. Would have rather had Reagan's, but he went 21. Fine. But yeah, 18, that's okay. And I'm not going to be targeting Aaron Nola as like my fourth round or something like along those lines. But if he falls to the fifth, sixth, I'm very much in, as he should still be good. He's going to have those bad games when the fastball gets hit, and that's just how it is. Curveball still one of the best curveballs in the game. You should be totally fine with Aaron Nola, just not necessarily as your, yes, the best ace out there.
Yeah. Joe?
I mean, I agree.
Yeah, I know. It was more of a you know.
I know. I just, I mean, I said,
do I really care?
For those of
you
ever watch it, the SP Bus show that Daph and I did the other day.
Most recent
Darren Nola is one of my busts. And it really isn't that I think he's going to bust, right? I don't think he's going to like absolutely be atrocious. It's that I think he's being drafted slightly too high. And so he will bust for where he's getting drafted. And it's more of, you know, everything that's been said. He's a little inconsistent. Everything seems to be going in the wrong direction with him. Strikeouts are going down. You know, he had a, the whip isn't bad, but you know, it is, it did rise again. You know, I had him, Nick, I had him in inside my top 10 initially too, for the exact same reasons. And I wrote about it and was like, yeah, I mean, he's a workhorse. I mean, what's wrong about that? Like, I don't, he's nothing crazy special, but we know what you're, you know what you're getting from him. And like, sometimes that is valuable, right? That safety net is valuable. You know what to build it around. But I think there's going to be guys that are just going to perform better than him at the end of the day. Like, and when the whole season's done, we're going to look back and go, yeah, he was SP 15. That's fine. Yeah. And that's what it is. So,
yeah, I mean, obviously I like Nola, but I agree. I don't think he is an SP one for fantasy reasons. Unless he falls far enough where it's like, all right, I need to take one here.
Cole Reagan.
Then
what,
then,
Ryan's
then
like 70
gone.
Years old, yeah.
Yeah. He still throws heat, man. Dude, he does. I'm telling you. No one's got mileage and 200 strikeouts a year like good old Nolan.
So, he's just not Cole Reagans. That's the problem.
That's true. That's true. I mean, he's not a lefty to ground. So sorry, there Nolan. It is. You're out. All right. Well, a name we just mentioned here briefly is Yamamoto. So let's look into him here next. His ADP is just climbing and climbing. So I want to get everybody's opinion on him. Or are you guys all in on the phenom, or do you think the value has gone too high at this point, Joe?
It's way too high. In fact, it's actually gone up since we last talked. Dap, he's now SB8.
Oh God,
keeps going. Stop it, people. Could it be awesome? Absolutely. But man, you are paying for the absolute ceiling at this point. It's no way that this returns good value for you. I don't know. I sure he had great success over in Japan. Could it come over? Sure. But like the projections, I know it's hard to project, right? These Japanese pitchers that come over, projections are what they are. If that's what his projections are, there's no way he returns the value. Even if he's, you know, 180 innings and 180 strikeouts with a 3.5 ERA and a 1.1 whip, still is an SP8. Like, it's just not happening.
Yeah. All right.
It's just hype at this point. It's just, man, I want him more than this guy, so I'm going to go get him. It's hype. It's going to come crashing back down, I have a feeling, eventually, but right now it's out of control.
Nick, what do you think, Reagans or Yamamoto?
Reagans. The thing about Yamamoto, this is what I say to a lot of guys, is when it comes to, like, a lot of the top 20 pitchers, I honestly say, look, get the guy that you want to watch the most. And obviously, I want to watch Cole Reagans every single time. And I can understand people wanting to get Yamamoto because it's fun. Fantasy baseball is all about fun and enjoying it. So that's if you want to go get for Yamamoto, go ahead. I think he's capped around 150 innings because it's a 10-year deal, and the Dodgers are going to treat this 24-year-old and be like, yeah, we're not going to overthrow you. And that seems pretty part of a cap. And
it's a hangnail, you know, you can't pitch for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So yeah, somehow they got Epler on it though. Not I don't understand. The whole Dodgeritis. So what I'm getting at here is Yamamoto has to be so much better. He needs to be everything we've always dreamed of for him to really come through at that ADP at 150 innings. And that just does not make sense to me. Look, if you want to compare it to Aaron Nola, 200 strikeouts for Nola, 150 for Yamamoto. That's 50 strikeout gap. Is Yamamoto going to make that up in ERA and whip? He's not going to make it up in whip, likely, because Nola's a whip god. Like, he had a 115 in his bad year last year. He doesn't walk enough batters, and he doesn't have a massive hit per nine. Like, it's not going to happen there. So is the ERA really going to be that much of a gap to justify as Yamamoto? And I say no. So I'm going to have Yamamoto probably around like 18 or so.
All right. Dap, what do you think?
You know, I think the other part, and this is, again, nitpicky here, right, is that Yamamoto was playing in a dome stadium. You know, almost all of his games Japan. I'm going to be really interested to see how he deals with the humidity when he's going to Arizona and when he's starting to travel to some of the other places, you know, with the outside, especially during the, you know, heat of the summer. We've seen some of the other pitchers that come over from various locations, you know, really dealing with that heat and humidity, especially. So that's going to be really interesting to me as well. Again, it's price to me, right? Yes, I would love to watch Yamamoto play and be like, hey, I'm getting those stats. But if he's at SP9, heck, anything within SP15, I don't know if I'm willing to take that risk, because it's also risk management, right? I'm going to have fun. I'm going to lose to Nick in every league that we play. But am I going to, you know, have acceptable risk while doing it? And that's going to be the big thing there. And at that, again, there's not much value and upside there that I'm going to feel good about that. And the one other thing too, like they're talking about, right? You know, are they going to start pulling them out at, you know, five innings, or, you know, are they going to cap them at five innings per start? Are you going to be able to get that quality start in those leagues that you're looking at quality starts? Again, looking at it from a fantasy perspective, right? Or are you looking at a QA3 where, okay, QA3, then you're solid. But so you started having to play with those variables. You're not going to see how the Dodgers really play with or manage him this year. And there's a lot of ifs there for me to, again, at an SP9, which is what we're drafting him, that's going to be your SP1, maybe SP2 on your thing. And you cannot kind of have that many question marks with that player.
I do want to clarify. You should beat me at fantasy. I focus on pitching, and I've realized that these days, that, like, I am not a great fantasy player for the whole season anymore. I'm much better at starting pitching stuff and hitter and relievers. I don't spend the time like I used to. So listen to Dap Scout a lot when it comes to fantasy baseball season and everything like that. I got you for pitchers, but everything else, Dap Scout's got you.
I have your, yep. Okay. I just finished sending that money to you. Yep. So you got, that up. You got that Zelle transaction. I just want to make sure you got that, Nick, before that. I felt bad. Okay. You keep going. Yeah. I'm sorry. So go ahead.
I heard another thud. Okay. So Yamamoto.
It was the phone, AJ.
Yeah. Well, so he dropped his phone.
Reese would take Miller over. He's
trying to get Nick to pick it up. It's pretty close for me. Anyway.
We got a question here. Klinger. I have Strider in the last year of my keeper league. Should I target Garrett Cole with my first pick? He also says he's got Strider, Grayson.
No, absolutely not.
Connor Green.
Get a hitter.
You got a lot of good pitchers.
Unless it's some it's a points league and you get like somehow way more like some crazy points for like number of innings pitched or something like that. There's absolutely no reason you should be going
unless,
in
like,
here.
The first pitcher available is like Spencer Steer. Like, no.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, yeah, it's definitely go hitter in most cases, I would say. So,
yeah.
All right.
All right, next question up here. We've got Mr. Blake Snell in fantasy drafts. He's not, he's not signed yet, but he is... he's trying to get signed. He's now agreed to shorten the deal so he can get on a team. Are we worried about him getting a late start this spring, Nick? Or are we just, you know, it's Blake Snell. He's coming off Cy Young year. He's going to pitch, you know, five innings a day.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of times where guys have had late starts and how quickly they were able to get into it. I remember like Jake Arrieta for a moment signed late. Yeah. And I don't think it really messed him up. I mean, Blake Snell's obviously doing whatever routine he needs to do on his own at this moment. He's not just twiddling his thumbs and live streaming, right? Like he's doing prep work at the moment. I wouldn't say that should steer you away from Blake Snell if you were really in on it before. Personally, I mean, I was one of the biggest voices saying like, look, Blake Snell deserved the Cy Young because what he did last year, he deserved success. He has what we call the lowest mistake rate, which is us essentially saying with our pitching model, he threw the fewest pitches in the zone that had double the chance to allow a hit. Like so much better than even second place. He had a 3% mark and Kodai Senga had a 4.3. And that was second place, like 50% worse.
Hmm.
So it was by design. It's so hard to replicate that. He was toeing the line with this massive walk rate and just executing the right pitches at the right time. Yeah, he's not going to replicate that again. This is not something I want to buy into. I already had him at around like, I don't know, I want to say like 30 or 28. And I might even have a little bit lower now that I'm more in on, say, Justin Steele and Yu Darvish than I was before. So, I'm just not found a situation where I've been able to draft Blake Snell, and I don't really expect to find one.
Yeah. Dap, what do you think?
So, you already were, I mean, so 2023 is an outlier in a lot of different ways, obviously, because he was towing such an incredibly thin line there between greatness and just having a terrible showing in some of those games, if you're watching them. But at the same time, too, if you're drafting thinking he's going to do 180 or even 165 plus innings this year, you're crazy to begin with. I mean, the 180 innings pitch was a real outlier for the last couple of years as well. So first of all, it's kind of like one of those things where you were not, you know, you're drafting him and expecting to have great starts when you get him, but also you're going to have that an IL stint or six or something of that nature. It's par for the course. It's baked in that price with, the genius that is Blake Snell. So if anything, this kind of, in my mind, would work for him, right? Because it allows him to start off and then have, you know, that longer off season. But again, I'm not so worried when you have these veteran pitchers that do this, right? Because it's almost like a lot of them to use a football analogy, right? Where a lot of veterans also try to skip off season workouts. You know, a lot of these guys are already doing their own thing. They know what to do. They know how to get themselves ready. They know how to do those things. They have to work on a new pitch, then, you know, that's something else, but I don't think Blake Snell's coming to anything new. So I'm not that worried about that. I am worried if I'm buying him where they're talking about in the first five rounds about getting anywhere near what you're getting 2023. If you're drafting for 2021, where you're getting, you know, kind of the higher strikeouts, you know, decent whip, and again, you're, you know, something around 11.5 plus K per nine, then great. But if you need anything else there, if you're really needing those wins or things of that nature, Blake Snell's not that guy. He's going to help you destroy your, really help you in your peripherals. He's going to help you with your Ks, help you with your whip and all those things. But you're going to have to balance out the fact that you're going to not have him all season. And that was going to happen even before he didn't sign. So if that wasn't already baked into your mindset, you shouldn't be drafting him that high to begin with.
Yeah.
The one aspect I would add there is the whip was 119 last year. And he's not a whip guy. Like, he's constantly is going to pull you down. But like the strikeouts are going to absolutely be there. Pretty much expecting the ERA to as well. But that always like messed me up because he's walking so many batters. He's not allowing the hits, but like he's walking more and not fun.
I mean, his BABIP last year dropped to 256, career low.
He deserved that, right?
Left on base percentage 86%, like really high numbers here. Like the luck factor, like you guys are saying, came into it. And like, you know, the expected numbers were a lot higher. So, I mean, and the projections show that, right? I mean, the projections show ERA is going to go up, whip's going to go up, strikeouts will still be there. If you can get 160 innings out of him, you know, that these projections are showing, then that's fine. SP 20-ish range, you know, you'll live with that, I guess. There's a huge risk. You'd probably be lucky to get like 130 innings out of him. That's kind of where he's been at for quite some time outside of last year. So,
Nick, I have a follow-up question for you real quick. If Cole Reagans gave you 99 walks, do you think he can still pull off 2.25 ERA?
No.
What? I thought Cole Reagans could do no wrong.
unless he gives up 99 walks.
he's not gonna have the same walk rate
But what if he just walked people because he's like, this is too easy? And he's like, I'm going to just walk some people because
then honestly, I'd be out because he's got to have a better mentality on the mound.
He's just going to signal to the umpire.
He's like, this is too easy.
No, this is a free pass. Yeah,
Blake Snell had the most walks out of any qualified pitcher last year.
God. Yeah. Right, well, yeah. So, I mean, again,
by quite a bit, too. Him. Charlie Morton was next with 83.
Yeah, I was like, again, I do want to emphasize the fact that like Blake Snell did this by throwing really great pitches in the zone, right? He nibbled endlessly and never gave in, which can work at times. It was a give and take. It was by design in that way, and it went in his favor. I'm not saying it's going to again, but you have to, you know, those numbers are ridiculous, but it's also with the context of not like the average pitcher doing this. It's a guy who threw the fewest mistakes in the zone than anyone else.
So have you always been against people that nibble? I just want to make sure I understand
that. I called it neckbeard approach of Dallas Keuchel, where he just goes around the zone and makes a neckbeard. And actually, that's what Jordan Montgomery did
funny.
In the playoffs.
Chad's saying Snell gives me massive 20.
Hey, there you go. Right, and I understand that for that reason. It's what Jordan Montgomery was able to do in the playoffs that he wasn't able to do all season. He tries to all the time. Why I'm out on Montgomery. It is so difficult to be that precise and meticulous. I'm not a big fan.
Dap's going to shave his regular beard and come back with just a neckbeard next week. Stay tuned, everybody.
I'm going to just go all neck.
Make
yeah.
Come back.
Yeah. Straight neck.
How much do I get?
So, Joe, you kind of touched on the point I wanted to make about Snell. You mentioned his left on base percentage at 86.7 last year. He had nearly identical stats in 2018 when he had his first Cy Young at 88% left on base. The only time it was worse was in 2020. Granted, he only pitched 50 innings because it was a shortened season. So, if you take his 2020 season innings pitched and his 2017, he still has pitched less innings combined in those 2 years than either of his Cy Youngs. That just goes to show this guy's never pitching innings. I mean, he's never going to be there for what you're drafting him. And, you know, you have to just hope that he puts it together and somehow toes the line again. I just don't think I'm willing to take the dive on him and in the F6P series draft, like he just sat there and
he comes up on the draft.
He's like sitting right at the top. I'm like, no, I'm good.
I mean, let me clarify. Like left on base percentage, a high left on base percentage, like isn't necessarily like, oh man, that's like it's not like a the kiss of death, right? It's
exactly.
It means that you've got like okay. It means you're probably allowing like a hit or a walk every, pretty regularly. And then like you've got strikeout potential to get these guys out. You know, we see guys like Cole and Senga and Morton and Kikuchi and all these guys at the top that have high left on base percentage. Of course, Snell led last year. Yeah. So there is, that does mean that you're adding risk to your game because if those guys come around and score, obviously that's bad. Yeah. So there's just you've got to just factor all that in when deciding what kind of pitcher you're really expecting these guys to be. And can they replicate it? Somebody like Cole, I will say I can replicate it time and time again because we've seen it with Snell. It hasn't happened time and time again. So I'm kind of out on him right now.
Yeah. I mean, going back to the luck factor, 18 was actually his career low in BABIP at 241. Last year was a 256.
Right, yeah.
So both Cy Young years, he's had extreme luck on his side to be able to net that. I mean, he was good, but I just don't trust him enough to be able to get back to that point. So I am passing on Mr. Snell. So next question up here, we've got some smash or pass we're going to play here with our post breakouts. We've got Mr. Tarek Skubal. I feel like there should be some like fun music or something.
Yep, was this your idea?
Zach Efron.
what the hell is that?
That'll work.
No, Bobby turn Miller, it off.
Loop, damn it. Bobby Miller. Kodai Senga,
amateur producer,
and Justin Steele. All right, smash or pass, Dap. I assume this is your question, so we'll start with you.
I didn't write it, but okay. So Scoobal is my favorite out of all these guys. My only concern with Scoobal, of course, is that they're going to figure out whatever they did to his flexor tendon almost 2 years ago. Now they're going to dig into that and find out that they like used like some gorilla like tendon or something, because when he came back, he was completely different. You know, his fastball was up at almost 2 miles an hour. But if you want to talk about who I love the most on this list, is because I still think his value there is Zach Eflin. Also because if we talk about also from a fan perspective, who I really want to watch, right, is Zach Eflin has a 6-pitch mix that is, he controls almost all the pitches. He finally has a fantastic defense behind him. Sorry about that, Phillies, but you know, he has a fantastic defense behind him, and he has a fantastic defense that we actually know they're going to play. You know, we had the big Franco mess last year. So, you know, he was supposed to be considered kind of that, you know, shortstop defender. And now they, you know, they lost him and they were kind of trying to figure that out. Now they have a very solid defending core, which they continue to show, obviously, because it's always a race. So you have elite defense, a guy that can throw 6 pitches. And I think he's just going to continue to grow. I don't think it was a mirage what we saw last year, even though Tampa Bay just seems to be, you know, we're close to Disney, so we make all dreams come true. But at the same time, from a fan perspective and from an overall fantasy perspective, I think there's more value there. But Scoobal by far is the best guy there out of this list.
All right, Joe.
I'm in on Steele, Eflin, and Scoobal. I'm leaning toward yes on Miller, and I'm sort of out on Senga. Like, the one thing that scares me with Senga is, like, talking about walking batters, like, he walked a lot too. 77, he was really high up on that list. So that kind of scares me for where, you know, he's going as well. Plus, he's also got the injury already. So kind of out on him. But the other four I like a lot, with Scoobal and Eflin is my top two out of this list as well.
Nick, smash or pass, who you got? We know you like Miller.
Senga is a shoulder strain, and I don't want to mess with shoulder strains.
Yep.
So I'm just not interested in Senga at the moment. Big fan of Scoobal, moving up the ranks a lot, not just because, like, last year increased 2 ticks, but now he's another 2 ticks. He's up to 97 plus now.
Wow.
What? It's unbelievable. And I don't know what gorilla tendons are and why we'd want them, but I'm going to look into that now. And then Zach Eflin, I'm agreeing with you guys that, like, that's a really good value. I thought it would see him closer to, you know, the top 15 or so. I'm seeing him like a 20 and change. Works for me. Justin Steele, I'm raising up in my ranks because his slider is grades out as one of the top 5 stuff sliders for us, which I didn't realize as well. He generally locates as well. And it's a good four seam that acts like a cutter. He spots it well. He was just experimenting with a changeup and a sinker too, and finally having something that goes arm side. But yeah, I was more out on him before, and now I'm raising him up closer to like 26 or so from like 30. And Bobby Miller, I'm a big fan of. I think Bobby Miller is just going to get better. And his stuff is just insanely good, and his command's good, and it's a great team context. And like, it's what Yamamoto wants to be, really, is what Bobby Miller is, kind of. And I know more about Bobby Miller and what he can be. And I'd rather take him. So, yeah, I'm in on 3 of these, 3.5 with Steele, and then out on Senga.
Yeah. If Senga didn't have the shoulder, would you be in on him?
Not really. I worry about the whip.
That's why I put him on here.
And I mean, I went back and forth of like, so how Senga works is, of course, we talk about the ghost fork. That's awesome. But he only does it in, you know, when he's ahead in the count, right? And it's a huge thing I have been trying to make a PSA about. I just did it with Bubba. Is I see a lot of people, especially with Senga's ghost fork, characterizing it. You're not doing this, guys. But characterizing it as a good pitch because of its ex-woba or its any sort of result stat, like an average, when it is always going to be good because he's not going to throw it with 3 balls and it's out of the zone. So if they're swinging at it, it's not going to be good for the batter.
So it's going to be a strikeout or a weak contact or something like that. It's very rare to allow damage on that kind of pitch. So don't use that number. Use instead strike rate. How often does he get strikes with it? Or what is the ICR on it? Or what is the swing strike rate on it? And he doesn't have a high strike rate on that fork ball. It's like a 54%, which is really low, which means that Senga needs to rely on four seamers and cutters. And he does not command the four seamer well. And that's the biggest knock I have against Senga. It profiles out as a pitch that should succeed upstairs really, really well, but it's just a scatterplot shotgun blast, and that's not great. However, he has this cutter that he just throws in the zone like 70% of the time for strikes, and it doesn't really on its own like look that good in a vacuum. It's like, yeah, it's just a kind of normal cutter, but it performs so well. And at first I was like, well, that's not going to happen again. This is ridiculous. And then I thought, well, maybe because he throws his fastball just kind of all over the place, batters just can't figure out which is the cutter, which is the four seamer. And
wait, this one where we're supposed
all
to?
This weak contact.
Yeah.
And it messes them up. So that actually might be somewhat sustainable. So I went back and forth on that. But at the end of the day, I mean, I understand the narrative of like, Senga started the year and he was getting comfortable. And so he had all these walks and he was just a cherry bomb and all that kind of stuff. And then the last, what, 3 months or so, 3.5 months, he all of a sudden locked in, lowered the walk rate a lot more and was a much better pitcher and was not like a 125 whip guy. He was more like a 112 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a part of me that's leaning in favor because of it. But at the end of the day, it's just weird. And I don't like weird. Anytime I feel like it doesn't tell the story that I can quite understand, I just say no.
AJ, I was thinking the exact same thing. I'm glad you said it first.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I don't like weird. Easy. Oh, I got you.
Thanks, Nick.
Unbelievable, guys.
Thanks, Nick.
Chad's over here saying, am I the only person in the world who thinks Miller?
Yes, you are, Chad.
Solid.
Yes.
What is it about what is it about Bobby Miller that you don't like?
You know, Bobby Miller also volunteers his time at orphanages. He has done all kinds of things for the homeless population, and for you not to like him is kind of ridiculous.
He can also be found in parks trying to play chess because his name's Bobby. People just assume that he's good.
I got the Bobby Fischer joke. I played in tournaments when I was like thinking.
Yeah.
Sometimes my humor is lost on the other dullards in the room, but it's okay.
Yes, we all get Bobby Fischer. Yes, yes, yeah, okay.
Whatever, weirdo. Sorry, you're not liked. Next question. All right, who do we think?
You sound like my mom right now.
Good. Who do we think is going to emerge from this group of number fives?
I'm going to let you guys argue about this one. I don't have any idea. I'm not going to lie.
We've got, I got you. Ronaldo Lopez. Easy. We've got great first name, Smith Shawver, and Hurston Waldrop for the Braves. Nick, what do you think?
I think right now it's Elder's job to lose. It's like Elder shows up and is like, yo, here's four innings of zero and run ball. Like they're going to say, okay, fine. I guess we'll just go with Bryce Elder.
Yeah.
But if I think who's the better one, it's going to be Ronaldo Lopez. I don't think that Bryce Elder is that great. It's just sinker slider. And the days when he can actually spot a slider down in glove side and keep his sinker arm side, it works. But Ronaldo just looks like a better pitcher, better four seamer. He's throwing enough strikes with a slider right now in spring training. AJ Smith Shawver is interesting. It increases four seamer velocity. It looks good. He has a fuller pitch mix, but he's still young and the command isn't quite there yet. They're obviously going to wait on that one. Like you have Elder already who has given innings for Atlanta. They're going to utilize that as much as they can until they say, okay, fine, this isn't working anymore. And we're not at that point. Or Reynaldo is just going to be like, yeah, that's mine. It's cool. Hurston Waldrop is a reliever. And I saw him in Dunedin, and it's really funny. I say that, and it's like, that doesn't change anything. It's when I watched it on video. I was at that game, and like, I realized how bad I am at the game to really do the scouting because my reference point is behind the pitcher with the camera, not like the side view of him. Like, I don't know. Now, Hurston Waldrop is a max effort, bad command pitcher. It's unbelievable how much movement is going on in his delivery.
at the very end of it. And he doesn't know where it's going. There's no way this pans out in my view until he changes something with that. And that's a reliever to me. He could be a great reliever. Could be like a Mark Wohlers thing with the fastball splitter in old Atlanta lore. Yeah, this is going to be Elder or Lopez. Lopez becomes a really interesting late arm if he wins that job, because you want to pitch for Atlanta. You get more wins, good defense, all that fun stuff. But watch it between Elder and him. If it's Elder, I like, okay, good matchups, I guess.
I mean, we'll probably see two of them at some point, you know, yep. Chris Sale.
Well, what might happen is it might be AJ Smith-Shawver by then.
Yep. Yeah,
so sure. If Elder doesn't get it, that means he's just not looking that great, and they might not even like hold on to him. They might have him as a sixth man or something. If it gets to the point that Elder gets ousted, it's a situation where they say, yeah, you're just not good enough, and we don't trust you with the fifth job. We're going to give it to Rayola then. So you might see AJ Smith-Shawver come up at that point.
All right, Joe, what do you think?
I already said I have no idea.
Yeah.
So, I'm not gonna lie. I literally don't have a clue. I'll just trust Nick on this one.
So with AJ Smith-Shawver, right? If you're in the dynasty leagues, you remember drafting him and thinking, okay, you know, a couple years from now, and he flew up through the minors, went through, you know, three levels. I think he did like 34, 35 innings pitched through three levels, and he got pushed too far too fast. He's got four great pitches, and he's a future starter for Atlanta. I just don't think it's this year. I think he needs to have a little bit more time in the minors to work on some stuff, especially his changeup, which was one of his least used secondaries, but got like the most amount of whiffs out of all of them. If he could just really hone that in and become, you know, maybe his second used pitch, or use it to set up his fastball and other things, that changeup is deadly. And he has four pitches, and he's just, I think, being able to really trust them, the secondaries at really key situations would really help him out a lot. Again, he's going to be 22 this year, so I'm not that worried about him, but I think he's the future for sure. But at the same time, it's Atlanta. They have so many darn pitches. It's like the Baltimore situation. But at the same time, I agree with Nick 100%. I think it's, Shawver's probably going to end up in the minors. I think he should be in the minors, but I think he'll be up pretty soon, especially Sale's third start after he gets hurt on his third start, gets pulled early and ends up on the IL for 2 months, give or take.
Yeah, somewhere around there usually.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Fair enough. I don't really like the Braves, so I don't really have anything to add. Other than I traded Elder last year for Sonny Gray, and it worked out better in my favor.
Oh, nice.
Down the stretch.
Oh, my gosh. So,
wow. It was Elder and Marlins outfielder.
Brian De La Cruz.
Yes, De La Cruz.
I named him
for Sonny Gray.
Pull that out. Look at you, Nick.
Write that timestamp down.
Yeah. Yes. I don't look at hitters, but you just talk about some vague description. I'll pull it out real quick. Yeah,
he's the only one I can remember.
Wearing a uniform, held a bat a lot. Brian De La Cruz. Yep, totally. Brian nailed it.
He likes big league chew gum. Brian De La Cruz. Got it.
Yep. Yes. All right. So we're gonna look into a popular sleeper here. That's Mr. Brady Singer.
I wrote this one.
Added a sweeper this year, so this has created quite a few swings and misses during spring training so far. Dap, since you wrote this, we will end with you. Joe, we'll start with you. Are you moving him up your draft board at all, knowing that Dap likes him?
I mean, sure. I'll take a late round stab at him. Like he's somebody who I feel like has always gotten a lot of hype, and he's been okay. 2022 was awesome for him, and then last year like it all just kind of fell apart, so maybe him adding in a new pitch, having some success in the spring, gives people more hope. So maybe I kind of expect, because people know the name, they're gonna see success in the spring, that he'll like be a popular late round target So I probably won't get him. But if he's sitting there, I mean, there's a lot worse things you can get. Grab him and cut him if he just blows up a few times. That's kind of how I feel with Brady Singer. Like, it's just never really super exciting for me. I feel like he's always supposed to have been better than he is.
All right, Nick.
So I want to go over very quickly, generally, like adding a pitch and why you should. Brady Singer is a sinker slider guy. Sinkers are good against the same handed batter. Okay, you throw that thing inside, goes in, and jams them. That's great. Sliders generally also good for same handed because it goes down and away from them really viciously. It can be, if it's more of a gyro slider, that's more of like the one that drops as opposed to the sweeper. Those can be better against opposite handed than sweepers. A sweeper is another weapon, again, against a same handed batter because it goes away from them. It is really bad against opposite handed batters. So when I think about Brady Singer, and I make the joke in the preseason saying, once again, I'm asking you to find a third pitch for Brady Singer.
Right.
I'm asking for a cutter or a changeup because he needs something against a lefty. A sweeper is not that. A sweeper is another weapon for a righty, which he already has two of. That's like his best thing. No, this doesn't change anything for me. And also you throw in like the team context, which isn't good. Like a guy like Brady Singer, for me to go after it, it needs like all the little pieces need to go right. And I see it as a hipster, headache inducing pitcher, stifling the entire roster, where you draft him on your team, you're not going to know what to do with him for, like, as you mentioned, like Joe, like a couple starts or something like that. No, last pick needs to be someone that's like, I want to know first start, one start. And like, did I hit the lottery? No, get out of here. Like the first couple weeks are so, so valuable for your fantasy team. So a guy like Brady Singer, where I just like, you're not, even if you have like that good start, I'm probably not going to see something new that makes me really think that you fixed it.
Or he just has that like good enough start where you're like in limbo with him.
Yeah. It's not going to be like a 10 strikeout, 5-inning game or something like that. You know, watch him do that now. I wish he does, by the way. I always want pitchers to be dope, but like it doesn't seem like he's going to. I don't think a sweeper, again, a sweeper was always good for same-handed batters, against same-handed batters where you didn't have a weapon against them. Like if you're a four-seamer changeup guy, sweeper is great. That's why, like, Michael King, awesome, right? He's more of a sinker, a changeup sweeper, but that's the kind of a thing that you want to pair against a changeup, not another slider. So I don't like this.
All right, Dap, floor is yours.
So first off, I'm in on Singer, definitely. There's a couple of reasons why, but if we're talking about the last pick, if you're trying to get that, you know, last pick of the, you want definitely want a Cardinals outfielder called Victor Scott. I'm just letting you know, everybody watching, if you want that last pick, Victor Scott for sure is your guy. Now, why do I like Brady Singer? There's a couple of reasons. One, he tried a whole bunch of new things mechanically last year. He also got injured, his back hurt as well, and did not have a normal offseason last year. So when he was trying new things mechanically, kept tinkering, and obviously it didn't work out. So he threw away a lot of that stuff. And when you see that, right, especially with a veteran pitcher like Singer, you started seeing a little bit of improvements, definitely saw some of the strikeouts tick up. It's all about how you, again, look at it from the fantasy's perspective, right? How you've set up your team. If you set up your team where you have people that could definitely help you with the ERA, hopefully don't mess you up with the whip. If you have, you know, drafted Snell earlier, then you'd be careful here. Singer's going to be somebody who definitely has potential here as well. Yes, you're absolutely right. The sweeper is not going to necessarily get you anywhere, but for his, what I loved about some of the offseason things, it's not necessarily what they're saying, it's how they're saying it. And what I loved about some of Singer's comments, especially, was the reason why he added new pitch, the reason why he messed with his repertoire, the reason why he was looking at going back to basics on his, you know, his offseason, and also how he's releasing the ball, is he said, "I sucked," plain and simple. And I love that. The fact that he's owning that, not like, "Hey, I just need a little minor tweak." No, he was terrible. So I think that, plus the fact actually the team that he's going to, does help. You know, he's with the Royals. there's not a lot of people pushing him for that rotation spot. I mean, there's a Cole somebody or other in one of those spots, but other than that, you know, okay. So he's not going to get pushed out. I think he has a pretty solid hold on a rotation spot. Right. I think you have a very cheap lottery ticket, and lottery tickets are the reason why you win fantasy, right? It's not because you just drafted perfectly and you never dropped anybody. This is going to be one of those late round picks that you grab along with Victor Scott, a Cardinals outfielder. And it's definitely going to be the reason why, you know, it's definitely going to round out your entire lineup.
All right. I think it's Ragens. Ragens is the guy you were talking about. Cole something.
Cole Raging Cajun. I apologize. Yeah. You're right. Yeah.
So this hurts so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Oh no.
He threw up in his mouth.
All right. So yes. Let's just wrap things up here. We've gone a little long here. So I think we go into the favorite late round sleepers position here for pitchers in general. Nick, as the guest, we will start with you. Who is your favorite late round sleeper pick?
You know, it's kind of funny how I don't have like the absolute answer right now. There are like so many that are jostling for positions. I can just list like all of the ones in my head and I'm going to steal all of your things, and that's just not fair. So what I am going to do, I'm going to do this one last to cover all the ones that you guys didn't miss, because I want to make sure you have the time to list the ones that you want.
We have you first on the slide, so you have the choice.
That's awesome. All right, fine. I'm going to steal everything. Yes. Pay attention to the Red Sox. You have Garrett Whitlock and Tanner Houck. Both of those guys have rotation spots now with Lucas Giolito out. I think both of them are such good adds because they are going to be able to go six innings constantly. You have DL Hall in there as well. You have also Tanner Houck's like throwing harder than anyone else in camp with the Red Sox apparently, and I'm just so excited to see that one. DL Hall's a super fun one. He is like the SP2 for the Brewers right now. Wait, you can believe that? Like Wade Miley's 50-59 makes it. That's a great thing. That means he has security.
Yeah,
I mean, and they I'm believe kidding. In him for just it.
Like, man, that's.
I actually, when the trade happened, I thought that DL Hall was more of like just a four seamer slider guy without good fastball command, and then I looked more into it. He also had his changeup that was great, and there was a lot more strikes than I expected. AJ Puck is also kind of similar to him, and he pretty much is confirmed to have the number four spot for the Marlins right now. Wide repertoire there, really good fastball. I mean, these are the kind of guys like you'll be able to see right away. Is this something that I'm really into? Mackenzie Gore is looking great. Also, four-seamer velocity is up. He's also elevating his four-seamer finally, because the Nationals were last year saying, yeah, we don't want to allow high fastballs because those allow home runs. Even though his four-seamer works better upstairs and it drives me up the wall, I could list a lot more, but I keep an eye on those guys.
Joseph?
I am going with one of Dapp's favorite, Brandon Fatt. Not the greatest season for him last year, but really started to show signs of life late last year. And I kind of want to expecting that to carry over and him be more consistent coming into this year. I mean, the guy had a huge, you know, he was a big pitcher. Everybody was talking about last year, like, oh man, should I stash him? Blah, blah, blah. Like, there's a reason for that, right? I mean, people really like this guy. He's got a good pedigree, great prospect coming up, and just sort of like it just didn't work, right? And you know, unlike Grayson Rodriguez, he went back down, came back up, and was awesome. It didn't quite happen for Fat that way. Kind of all came together right at the very end. So maybe that's it clicked enough for him that I'm just kind of hoping it'll, you know, and you can still get him pretty late in drafts. I want to say his ADP right now is 206. So that's pretty late.
All right, Dap, who do you like?
I like Tampa Bay to do their magic yet again. Aaron Civale. So Ryan Bloomfield, Ryan BHQ on Twitter, has this phenomenal chart that I referenced in our sleepers video as well. So in the 13 games in Cleveland versus the 10 in Tampa, let me just show you the improvements that happened, right? So his walk percentage went from 7.2% to 5.6%. K rate, Jesus, 19% to 29.3%. K per walk percentage, 11 to 23. Swinging K, which is great, even, you know, just 1%, 10 to 11.5. And then this CSW percentage, I don't know who came up with this.
Yeah,
but
what is that?
Yeah, just CSW. I mean, so, anyways, was improved from 29% to 30%. So again, just it wasn't one start, 10 starts. Tampa Bay again just doing it, and you have an incredible defense behind you. I think this is all pointing up. And again, people haven't shown that they've kind of bought into this. His value's still quite low. I think we're looking outside. I think it was we looked last, Joe. I think it was 175 or so in some of the picks. So again, I'm all in on Tampa Bay just continuing to turn pitchers around and turn them all into aces.
All right. 210.
210. There you go. I am all over that. Like in the 190, I even pick him around early just because I want to make sure I have him on my team.
Yeah. The to your point, he came on to do like an hour and a half with us. If you want to watch that one, it's me breaking down a start with him. That's on YouTube. And he mentioned that he wants to lean a lot more on that slider this year, which was much
he's still my heart.
With, the Rays.
All right.
So this might be true. Fun.
Yeah, it's so yeah. Valley could yeah. do really good things. I just hope he's able to be healthy for long enough.
Yeah. All right. So I'm gonna go totally out of the box here, and I'm gonna go with a homer pick.
Oh, gosh.
Shocker.
So we're done with the show.
yes.
Love
the music.
No, and I didn't change mine. Sorry.
Amateur hour here. Well, so the interesting thing here that really that I'm looking at is
changed to
Sanchez, who is projected to be the fifth starter for Philly, actually has a higher ADP than both Ranger Suarez and Taiwan Walker, which Walker I can get. I was kind of shocked to see that he was a little bit higher than Suarez, though. I mean, he's got a 24% K rate. You know, I like that. This is just coming off of last year in 19 games, 18 starts, just under 100 innings pitched total. 4% walks, walk percentage versus the 24 strikeouts, 57% ground balls. You know, the ERA was mid threes. He's got good stuff. He's introducing a cutter this year. So I think that he's going to be the one that could easily step in ahead of Walker, and he deserves to. Walker couldn't even make a playoff roster. So that shows right there that they trust this guy. He's still young. So the innings cap will probably be there. He's projected around 130 or so innings this year, but if he's sitting there and you're looking for some depth, I think he's a good guy to add. He can get you some good counting stats. And again, I it's not just a homer pick. It's fact. Okay. So there you go, people.
If AJ says it, it's gotta be true.
Yeah. I don't always need to be right, but everything I say is not always true either. So one of those things could be right.
Love Christopher Sanchez. Throwing James Paxton in there, who's just getting overlooked as like he's starting for the Dodgers out of the gate. Like, uh-huh. Get that value, and it's going to be there until he gets hurt. Who cares? He gets hurt, it's the last pick in your draft. Whatever.
Yeah.
Exactly. I agree.
Does not matter.
Trade him 3 weeks into the season and don't worry about it then.
Oh, yeah. Cutter Crawford's at 253 in NFBC, which is absolutely crazy to me. And yeah. I'm such a big fan of that. Edward Cabrera is at 270, and he's looking better with his mechanics right now and actually could be reliable. You have the Tigers of Matt Manning, Reese Olson, and Casey Mize, and two of them are going to be starting, mm-hmm. likely yeah. Manning, and I don't know who the other one is, but both whoever the two are, honestly, they all three look great right now and could all be very good out of the gate. And Matt Manning is at 95 with a four-seamer that's kind of looking like Zach Wheeler's at the moment, so with a reliable slider.
It's kind of great. So pay attention to those guys too.
Yeah, there's a lot of dudes like in the upper 200s and ADP right now that I'm like, so.
I'm sorry, Nick. Who got you to go to ecstasy there? What was
Louis Varland, if he's.
Oh yeah, Louis Varland. Oh my god,
Anthony Descafani. But it's supposed to be Anthony Descafani right now. But just like,
yeah.
Just watch to see if it's Louis Varland. If it's Louis Varland, that's who you want. Okay.
If you haven't read any of Nick's stuff, him and Louis Varland are like. Like there's
it's such a good fastball. It's mind blowing. And like, oh yeah, he also has a filthy slider. What? He's got the full mix. He's got other stuff too. It's
somebody.
Anthony Descafani is like, oh, I just throw a slider in the zone, right? That's all I'm supposed to do.
Yeah. Give Nick a hug. Somebody give Nick a hug. I feel bad.
It drives me up the wall. It was his, and then he just swooped in and said, like, hey guys, I'm Tony Disco. Oh my god.
By the way, your article where you do the, you know, the day after and you kind of break it out, definitely one of my favorite reads throughout the season.
Oh, so. The SB Roundup? Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like
that's
too.
The yeah. Everything that I do cool. is based on that one article.
Now like, don't forget, I have to have the key.
Studying from that.
Yeah, all your terminology, I have to have like your terminology key to be like, this is a, oh, cherry bomb.
You can just
bomb.
Hover over every bit. It's got a tooltip. I make it so that you can remember. So
sorry.
All there for you. If it's in red, you can just hover over it and they'll tell you what.
My apologies. Thanks, Nick.
No, I mean, we got to make that clearly.
Did you know that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and knowing's half the battle.
G.I. Joe.
That was supposed to be a star.
We do have
that is
question.
It for our pitcher draft strategy. Nick, thank you for joining us. This was a lot of fun. Listening to you great. And Dap gush over each other.
mostly one way, but thank
you. Yeah, I was trying to be nice, Dap.
No, when I meet you, I'll show you all the letters that you've sent me. So
They're all unopened.
You're going to show me in the courtroom, aren't you, Nick?
They're all rubber banded in a safe.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you visit the courtroom, you know,
right. Yeah. Behind the plexiglass. Got it. Okay.
So he's sending you a letter.
A through B squared.
When you put letters. The human hair in there, what exactly? I was like, that's just me showing him that I got Zach Eflin's hair.
It's
been wonderful, guys. Man, I enjoy this thoroughly. Right, if you are still listening to this podcast,
dude,
right
there
now,
are
you should be rating and reviewing.
Still watching,
this
apparently, this
on
is
iTunes.
Phenomenal. This
you guys, great. If you haven't done it yet, go. They put so much work into this. You guys see it clearly. They deserve your 5-star rating and review on iTunes. Go and do that. It goes so far.
Thank you, Nick.
For shows like this,
thank
make sure you.
Wow.
Do.
Well,
much appreciated.
While we've got you here still, let everybody know where they can find you and your stuff and all the great content you put
just
out.
Come on by to PitcherList or just go to playback.tv/PitcherList in the morning, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. I'm live streaming each morning as I get some work done and I watch pitching and answer your questions. So coming up.
All right. And and Chad, you're fired. No, just it doesn't allow negative stars. Thanks, dude. All right. Well, that's it for the show. Nick, we will bid you adieu, and we'll have to do it again soon.
All right.
Of course.
Thanks,
take care,
great,
guys.
Great having you on again, Nick. Thanks.
Thanks, Nick.
All right. So that's it for the. It's not. Oh, because I didn't. I don't know what I'm doing. There we go.
Hey.
I forgot I made a new layout and I thought it would like auto switch back like the old one did. Apparently it didn't. You know, we're learning things. All right, that is it for the show. Next week we're jumping back into offense and doing our outfield preview. So we will be back next Thursday for that one. Until then, have a good night, everyone, and see you then.